corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. Website, tomhartman.com. If you click live chat, it'll drop you into our live chat room, where you'll find some of the finest minds in the entire internet. Some concern these days about the future of the boson layer. We have with us today in the studio, Swami Beyondananda. Hey, Swami.
Hey, I'm here, and you're there, and that is neither here nor there, or not there. Yes,
neither there nor here.
Yes,
and also I understand we have with us Karl Rove's speech advisor, the fellow who first taught George W. Bush how to give speeches, Bullwinkle.
That's right.
Oh my goodness.
That's right. In fact, this is I have the total denial package. It's called Nothing Up My Sleeve.
Very good, very good. Steve Behrman, wakeuplaughing.com is Steve's website, and it's a great place to hang out and find out what's going on. And
as I was saying, Buster, this planet ain't big enough for the two of us.
Uh-oh.
Off you go.
Uh-oh. You've managed to anger the ducks.
Well, that's right. Well, you know, angering the ducks is not what it's quacked up to be.
Get that moose out of here.
If it quacks like a duck and steps like a goose, there's something foul afoot. I've said that many times.
I love it. We have been trying to come up with a name for the goose that lives on our back deck.
Ah.
And she, or he, I'm increasingly thinking it's a he. I haven't figured out how to sex geese yet. But, you know, it's, in any case, this goose will not let anyone within 50 feet of the house, of the place. He's just, you know, there's a few ducks that he'll hang out with. A few other male ducks, but no female ducks, no other geese, and just any goose who gets near, he quacks. And in fact, there's a picture of him on our chat room, and so we're thinking maybe we should call him Condoleezza Goose because he's a warmonger.
Well, if he starts goose stepping, look out.
Yeah, well, he's been goose stepping all along.
Yes.
Speaking of goose stepping, in the news, Pat Buchanan. This is in the Washington Times today. Pat Buchanan speaks of American conservatism in the past tense. The three-time presidential candidate, commentator, magazine publisher, and fellow who was, for a moment, infamous last week when he said, you know, that, gee, why did we go after Hitler? He was duly elected by his people. Germany didn't need to be liberated. What astounds me is that a paragon of the right, a former Republican candidate for president, can say this, and it's barely even mentioned in the press, whereas if John Kerry had said something like this, we would hear about it for 6 months.
Well, you know, I think that as part of the press, you know, many of these stories, they give blanket coverage. That's where they cover it up with a blanket and smother it to death.
Yeah, well, the cons are particularly good at that. So, anyhow, here, Pat Buchanan now, he says, the conservative movement does not exist as a unifying force any longer. There's still a lot of people who are conservative, but the movement is now broken up, crumbled, and dismantled.
Well,
I guess there's hope.
Well, there is hope, and because there has to be a distinction made. I say we have to listen to the Republicans more. But not the banana Republicans who are in charge now, who are turning this country into a banana republic.
So what Republicans should we listen to?
Well, we should listen to Abraham Lincoln. He said, government of the people, by the people, for the people. And I would add, where the government does our bidding, not the bidding of the highest bidder.
Good plan.
We need to listen to Teddy Roosevelt, who actually was a conservative who believed in conserving.
Yeah, he created our national parks. He also championed the law that was passed in 1907 that made it a felony for corporations to give money to politicians.
That's right. And then we need to listen to Dwight D. Eisenhower, who said to beware of the military-industrial complex, which is a disease that we've suffered from now for over 50 years.
Yeah.
And we need to listen to Barry Goldwater, who spoke out against the American Ayatollahs on the religious right.
Yeah, in fact, interesting that you say that. I have right here on the desk, if I can find my cursor here, right on the desktop of my computer.
No, you cannot curse on the air now, so
no.
Please don't find it.
I can curse her, though.
Oh, yes.
Cursor. Excuse me. Those who see, this is Barry Goldwater, those who seek absolute power, even though they seek it to do what they regard as good, are simply demanding the right to enforce their own version of heaven on earth. And let me remind you, they are the very ones who always create the most hellish tyranny. Absolute power does corrupt, and those who seek it must be suspect and must be opposed. From Barry Goldwater, an appropriate quote for today as Bill Frist is going to try and blow up the filibuster.
That's right, and that is a very good... You know, I'll tell you, I have to be blunt here, that people like Karl Rove give Machiavelli a bad name.
Yeah. Have you ever read The Prince, actually?
I read The Prince. I read The Pauper. And
no, I'm serious. By Niccolo.
Yes, I read this many, many years ago when I was younger.
It's really brilliant in a way. It's morbidly brilliant. I read it for the first time maybe, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. I actually wrote an op-ed piece about how the principles of The Prince were being used by the Bush administration. And I thought, you know, everybody talks about this, and you get all these quotes and sound bites and things. But I ought to sit down and read it. And it's really not that long. I mean, you can read it in about 2 hours.
Right.
It's maybe 60 pages or 70 pages, something like that. And he had it right. And he had it right about how to manipulate the people in the way that you want and how to govern in a way where your only goal is to maintain power and has nothing to do with being a statesman, has nothing to do with advancing the interests of the nation, and how to do it successfully. And what's so startling is there's almost, you know, it's divided into a whole series of chapters and, you know, on dealing with the people and on dealing with the he didn't call it the press back then, but the equivalent, and, you know, on dealing with political opponents and on dealing with political allies and all these different things. And you go through step by step every single chapter that Niccolo Machiavelli wrote, and it's Karl Rove and George Bush Jr. It's right there.
That is what they're doing. And I call it the Nazi program to help make sure that people do not see what's going on. And my friend Bullwinkle, who's over here, I call it the stupidization program.
Uh-huh. And why do you call it that, Bullwinkle?
Well, because I think that people are being made stupider than they need to be.
I see. So if we could just bring the average American IQ to that of Bullwinkle, then more people will vote for George W. Bush? Is that?
Well, no. I think that actually what we have to do is we need to raise the intelligence. We need to not insult the intelligence of people, but we always need to insult lack of intelligence, and that is in behaviors and so on.
Yeah.
So not separate the people from behavior, not to attack the individuals.
Yeah. Well, I find this truly fascinating. Pat Buchanan in the Washington Times today, a featured story, Ralph Z. Hallow wrote it, talking about how the conservative movement has gone over the edge, that it's not conservative to declare war on a country that doesn't threaten you. It's not conservative to turn over your forests to big multinational corporations. It's not conservative to sell off public lands. It's not conservative to make government larger, which, interestingly, if you look at the last 10 presidents, the presidents who have made government larger far and beyond anybody else have been, in this order, number one, George Bush Jr., number two, Ronald Reagan, number three, Richard Nixon. And, you know, ironically, you know, everybody says, well, what about LBJ and the Great Society? Well, yeah, the Great Society programs were a pimple on the butt of the military-industrial complex. I mean, you know, it's just they were relatively insignificant. There are all kinds of strum and drang, you know, fury and storm raised around them by the Reichwing machine, by the media machine.
Did I hear you say Reich? Reich wing?
Yeah, the Reich wing. Yeah.
Yes, okay.
I don't refer to them as right wingers anymore because they're not right. They're Reich.
Exactly.
So Reich wing talk radio.
Well, two rights don't make a Reich, hopefully.
No. But two Reichs.
Two Reichs. We don't want to know what that makes.
That's right. And these guys want us to find out, unfortunately.
Yes.
So here we have actually a guy who, you know, part of him is a Nazi, Buchanan. He thinks that we shouldn't have intervened in World War II because, after all, the Germans didn't need to be liberated. They elected Hitler. The fact of the matter is he's a little misinformed there. Hindenburg appointed Hitler after the terrorist incident.
That's right.
Reichstag
fire.
Yeah.
So very familiar. Deja voodoo.
Yes.
Deja voodoo. And of course, your listeners may or may not know, but that the American Conservative magazine in 2004 actually came out in favor of John Kerry. They actually endorsed John Kerry.
Well, it was one of four endorsements.
Yes.
They had four different editors, and one of those four, and so they made four endorsements, and one of the editors endorsed John Kerry. Yeah, and this is the magazine that Pat Buchanan helped found, as I recall. And the reason why they voted for John Kerry was because if you looked at John Kerry's policies through the lens of an old line Barry Goldwater conservative. John Kerry, he didn't qualify really as an old-line conservative, but he was more conservative than George W. Bush. George Bush Jr. is a radical. He's a Stalinist. He's a single state, you know, a single party state. Well, you know, I'm starting to rant, and I'm just and it and I don't mean to just be throwing names out or calling names. It's a very real problem what's going on here. This thing with Newsweek magazine really troubles me, because what I'm seeing right now played out is the exact thing that happened with Dan Rather. A news media, a news agency reports a real story. The apparently, from all indications, I mean, here we have three different people who have reported this in London. It's been reported in other media. As people have gotten out of Abu Ghraib, they've reported this. One of the translators there has talked about this. I mean, there's no shortage of people who say that one of the ways that they tried to get these guys to confess or whatever, you know, one of the ways that they tried to scare them or upset them or anger them was by sitting on the Quran, stepping on the Quran, putting it in the bathroom, and tossing it in the bucket that they have to use as a toilet, those kinds of things. And Newsweek reports it, and now all of a sudden the White House is trying to spin it to say that it didn't happen. And in fact, I was listening to the news media this morning, even NPR this morning, the way that they were reporting about Newsweek's retraction implied that Newsweek was saying this didn't happen. And Newsweek has not said this didn't happen. Newsweek has said that their source can't corroborate it, can't the one source that they quoted. But they're not saying it didn't happen.
That's right. Well, I think that the press is being pressed. They're being pressed very hard. And so perhaps the answer is for we the people to begin to press the press from the bottom up. If there is plenty of ground support, then things will change on the air.
And how do we do that,
well,
Swami?
That is a good one. I wish I could see into the future, but I think that perhaps maybe what we can do is find out who these news executives are. Well, you see, I have a program. My mission right now as part of the Right to Laugh Party.
Ah, yes.
Is to end ethic cleansing.
Okay.
And ethic cleansing is simply the cleansing of the ethical people out of positions of power.
Uh-huh.
And I think that we need to get on this, and Congress needs to get on this without delay.
Yeah, without delay.
Without
time delay.
But you see, the ethic cleansing problem is that the media is complicit in all this, and they are liability insurance.
Yes.
For the
yes.
administration.
And this is a problem.
We need to press them from the bottom up by calling the executives and challenging them to use their conscience, because people still have that. Not everybody's been ethically cleansed.
Not everybody. It's certainly in Congress. I mean, there are still some truth tellers there.
That's right.
You know, we have Bernie Sanders, for example,
yes.
a good truth teller, and Earl Blumenauer from Oregon. There's a few who are actually still out there telling the truth. God bless them. And for those who aren't, and by the way, if you want to let your member of Congress know what you think about Bill Frist blowing up the filibuster today, you may call Congress toll-free, 1-877-SOB-USOB. That's the telephone number for Congress, 1-877-SOB-USOB. Let them know what you think. Tom Hartman here with you, along with Swami Beyondananda from WakeUpLaughing.com, 20 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the program. Move the keyboard out of the way here, and we can, there we go, we can get somebody on. Alan in New York is with us. You're live with Tom Hartman, and Swami Beyondananda of WakeUpLaughing.com is on with us as well. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Are you there?
I am here, and you
All
are
right.
there, and
yeah.
we are all together.
I wanted to make a comment about the, I wanted to just point out that it seems to me that it's grossly unfair for these right-wing zealots to take a stand against abortion, because they don't have to worry about getting women pregnant. The way Horsley does it with farm animals doesn't result in pregnancy, and the way Hager likes it doesn't either.
Yeah, well, these guys have figured out birth control. I mean, they're the ones who are telling us how it should be done. But yeah, I think that there's a larger issue than that. It's easy to poke fun at a couple of you know, unfortunate cases. But the reality is that there is this larger issue which has dominated the scene for thousands of years of hierarchy and domination, male domination in particular, and it's a societal illness.
And that's why I am a fundamentalist, because we are non-dominational.
Non-dominational. Good one. Good one.
We believe in fun.
There you go. Alan, you wanted to make... Go ahead.
No, that's about it. I think it's great to poke fun at them. Keep it up.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. You know, yeah, well, and on the other hand, some would say... Whoa! Some would say...
It must have been my breakfast.
That was definitely not your breakfast.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Oh, my. We have the vault is opened here.
Now, I've gotten word that a child is using his imagination, and I've come to put a stop to it.
So, are the conservatives at war with themselves? Are we seeing the beginning of the end of the cons? I am really strongly of the opinion that we are. I think these guys are self-destructing.
Well, but what about the moderate Republicans? Have they become like the elephant that's not in the living room? Do they exist? Is there such a thing?
It's a good question. You know, I mean, you have Olympia Snowe and you have Lincoln Chafee and Susan Collins, and I think that's about it.
Yes, well, they're a rare breed.
Yeah, and even they get made fun of. They call them rhinos. Matt in Kansas is on the line. Hey, Matt, your thoughts on all this?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Tom, I've been writing to both my state senators, my U.S. senators, Mr. Roberts and Mr. Brownback, continuously about this filibuster issue. And yesterday, believe it or not, Mr. Roberts has come out and said he is really starting to have some misgivings about
Pat Roberts, you're a senator?
Yes, yes.
Oh, hey, good on you.
Well, I'll tell you, I've written he and Mr. Brownback. I call him Brown Nose, but anyway.
Well, as Mr. Magoo would say.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know,
Tom,
keep
calling. I'm sure not going to take any credit, but, you know, I don't by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, you just keep pecking away and pecking away and pecking away and sending quotes like Barry Goldwater's quotes and other things to these people, and I think maybe, you know, eventually some of them do listen.
Yeah, because what they are doing is not conservative. What Bill Frist is talking about doing is radical. It's Stalinist. It's single-party state rule. It is not conservative. Barry Goldwater is rolling over in his grave.
Well, I guess all I'm saying is just don't give up. Just keep chipping away. Keep telling these people what the right thing is and the correct thing, excuse me.
Yeah.
And and who knows? We can make a difference.
There you go. Well said, Matt. And thanks for being part of making the difference. Congratulations.
Well, I'm trying.
Good
on
you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's great to hear that. You know, so instead of, you know, Matt and folks like him keep calling these folks to account, and instead of hearing them say...
Nothing.
Yeah, instead of that, we're going to hear them say, no, we're not going to go with this, Mr. Frist. Sorry, no more. It's time to change. So, a little levity for the day.
We need to pump ironies. All of these ironic things, we need to pump them up and make them visible to people who are not seeing.
Who are not, yes, to stop the Nazis.
Stop the Nazis.
Yes, well said. We're here with Swami Beyond Ananda from WakeUpLaughing.com in the studio with us, the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Cowboy, gunslinger, riding on the range. I'm right educated and I can't affect any change. Strange.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. And if you'd like to say hi to Swami Beyond Ananda, who is hanging out with us in the studio today here in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, on the banks of the Willamette River. Jeff, in fact, and I don't see what city or state you're in, Jeff. Where are you located?
Hey, Jeff. Hello?
Hey, Jeff, where are you located?
This is Jim.
Oh, Jim. Jim in Kansas.
Yes. Oh, okay. You're right. I'm up here in Topeka.
Oh, okay, great. Jim in Topeka, Kansas. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, I was thinking about our good buddy Bolton.
Yeah.
And now we are being unfair to him.
Okay.
Stop and think about it. The Russians had Khrushchev. Remember the picture of him beating his shoe at the podium?
Well, actually, it was at the World Trade or the what do they call it? The World's Fair in New York City, and it was in one of those sets where they were showing the Kitchen of the Future. And he was, well, actually, there was twice that Khrushchev did that. Once was there where he got in an argument with Nixon, and the other, yeah, was in the UN. Okay, you're right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, now we can top him.
Okay.
Because the first time Bolton, our good ambassador Bolton, gets up there and somebody votes against invasion to Iran, he will start throwing staple guns at them.
I see.
And he will threaten them with invasion.
What do you think, Swami? Do you think there's an upside to having Bolton in the UN?
Well, I think we should. We need to be. He wants us to be Bolton out of the UN, and I think that he's the perfect expression of the policy. So it'll be totally clear that we want to lead the world unilaterally, and it will be clear to everybody, including Americans.
Yeah.
And of course, we do want one party rule as long as we're the party.
That's right. It's a no party for anybody else. However,
that's right.
It's the future fair where the future is
no,
but no fair at
but
all.
Not fair, yes.
You know, like George says, this would be so much easier if this was a dictatorship, and of course I'd be the dictator.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think that this is where it is going.
Yeah.
That's right.
Or Jim, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Can I make one more point?
Sure.
Now this one's a serious one.
Yeah.
In the past, I've heard people on the right always talk about the fact. The one thing that defends our Constitution is the military. And I would say to them, no, it's always been our court system.
Yeah, the one thing that stands between, the purpose of the courts is to defend the Constitution. The military
That's
is
right.
to defend the borders of the country.
That's right, and that's why they want to usurp the courts.
Sure. Sure, because they know that they can't get power by the electoral process. In fact, I see this as a sign of increasing desperation. These guys increasingly know that there's no way they're going to be voted into office. In fact, we're going to start voting them out of office. And so they're trying to grab power by taking over the one branch of government which is not voted upon, where you can have a lifetime appointment and wreak your havoc for several generations. And that's why they focus like a laser beam on the courts, because I really and truly believe that these guys have very limited time, 2, 4, 6 years at the most, that you're going to see Republicans controlling the Congress and the presidency.
Well, don't call them. Please don't call them Republicans, because the Republicans are being have had their party stolen.
I understand, Jim.
You know,
but the Republicans
are anomalously, they're one party government. They're one party. And they're not Republicans, nor Democrats, needless to say.
Yeah.
Well, the Republicans need to find out that they have had their party stolen. They don't know it yet.
Somebody needs to tell
them. Somebody needs to tell those people.
Hey, guys, take your party back. Jim, thanks a lot for the call.
Good
to hear from you. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate your calling in. John in New York is on the line. Hey, John.
How you doing, Tom?
Great.
I called that number that you guys told me to, SOB. I put in a complaint. I just let them know that they're going to spark off a civil war here in our own country if this doesn't stop, and that we're not really the minority. We're actually the majority, because Bush didn't win, so we really are the majority.
What member of Congress did you ask for when you called 1-877-SOB-USOB?
I just asked for the New York Congress. They put me through New York. They asked what state I was from, and they just put me through.
So you got the New York congressional delegation?
Yeah, I spoke to a woman. She took a message. I don't know. I think they were blowing smoke.
Who knows? I don't
well,
know.
That's, is that secondhand smoke or firsthand smoke?
Yeah.
Probably was for me.
They've used it before, I believe.
Yeah,
secondhand.
I think I successfully beeped that. I'm not sure if I had to or not, but I think I successfully beeped that. Anyway, John, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you. It felt good to get off my chest.
Yeah, okay. I appreciate it. And other body parts that hopefully we did beep out. Anyway, the Nation article puts Hager on the defensive. Speaking of Dr. David Hager, the guy whose peculiar habits with his wife, rape of his wife, I mean, let's just say what it was, has been outed by Nation magazine, now says that he's not going to be on the president's advisory committee after June 30th. So maybe RU 486 an abortion pill. I mean, let's call it what it is, RU486. It'll produce an abortion up to about 40 days after conception. Or Plan B, which is a contraception pill. It doesn't actually cause an abortion. If the egg has already been fertilized, you still have a normal pregnancy, even if you take Plan B. But if the egg has not been fertilized, it prevents the egg from being released by the ovaries into the fallopian tube. So it's really a contraceptive device. But David Hager has been opposed to that as well, that being part of the right-wing agenda, anti-birth control as well as anti-abortion. And he's no longer going to serve on the president's advisory committee. So they'll just have to find another guy like him.
I guess he was too, he went a little bit too far in the anti-woman program. I mean, don't you think it's interesting that who gets convicted at Abu Ghraib but women? Don't you find that interesting?
Well, it's another, yeah, Janice Karpinski.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's another example of this administration and just the mindset, the whole conservative mindset of take it out on the weakest, take it out on the least powerful, because they don't take on the most powerful. I mean, this is the reason why Iran and North Korea right now are dancing as fast as they can to develop nuclear weapons.
That's right. We are forcing them into the situation by letting them know that we don't follow any rules. We don't believe... this administration does not believe in the rule of law. It believes in the overrule of law.
Yeah, well said. And because during the Clinton administration, both Iran and North Korea had nuclear reactors, and they said, fine, come on in, UN, Mohammed al-Baradei, come on in, put TV cameras in here, monitor everything we do, everybody who goes in, everybody who goes out, every step that's taken, keep track of it all. You know, we will let you totally supervise this thing. We're doing nothing, because we don't feel threatened.
That's right.
Well, and then George Bush says, axis of evil, these three countries. And one of them didn't have nuclear weapons. And they said, we don't have nuclear weapons. You got Saddam Hussein out there going, here's 14,000 pages of documentation. Let me prove to you I've got nothing. And George Jr. goes, oh, cool, he's got nothing. And so the Iranians and the North Koreans, they're saying, ain't going to make the same mistake.
That's right.
Ain't going to make the same mistake.
We have found the weapons of mass destruction, and unfortunately, they are us.
Yes, to paraphrase Pogo.
Yes.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Donna in Texas is with us. Hey, Donna, welcome to the Tom Hartman program with Swami Beyondananda.
Hello, I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to let you know that I was listening to you this morning, and I heard the phone number, the SOBUSOB.
Right.
And so I called it, and I got through right away. And Kay Bailey Hutchison's phone was busy, so they let me talk to John Cornyn, and I just told him that I was tired of them walking all over the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, and that we here in Texas are getting tired of it, we're wising up, and that they ought to just straighten up.
Good on you, Donna.
So, just want to let you know that I don't know if the person before you called, if that's what they were talking about, being able to get through a congressional office, if this was the same thing or not.
Right, yeah.
I've only got a minute of that, but...
Well, that's wonderful.
I just wanted to let you know, tell everybody to try it because it'll work. I was surprised I got through.
Yeah, it really does work. It really is the phone number of the United States Capitol. It's toll-free.
Yeah.
It's not published anywhere. It's the secret toll-free number. I mean, there's actually a real you-can-dial-it number, which is 212-225-3121, 202, excuse me, 225-3121. But if you don't want to pay for the call, if you want your tax dollars to pay for the call, I mean, after all, they've got the phone number there. It's 1-877-SOB-USOB, and if you can see the letters on your phone, you can dial toll-free to your member of Congress. That's
well,
great, Donna.
I'm going to tell everybody about it, and it was so unusual. I said, oh, I get to talk to a warm voice, and then I forgot, oh, they're Republicans. They don't have a warm voice.
but they listened to you. They listened to you, didn't they?
Yes, they did, and I was very surprised, and they said that they would pass the message on. So I'm encouraging everybody to try it.
Great. Great.
Not all of us in Texas are like, you know, are like George Bush. In fact, he's not even a Texan.
No, he's from Connecticut, and he went to prep schools in the Northeast, and he went to college in the Northeast. He didn't go back to Texas until he was in his mid-20s.
Absolutely.
So
it's nice talking to you. Thank you so much for your program.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. And thank you for being a great and loyal American, a patriotic American, and calling your United States senator and delivering that message. And I suspect right now all over America there are people furiously dialing 1-877-SOB-USOB to call their member of Congress. I think it's just so cool. And if you want to call this program and let us know what happens when you do, our telephone number is 1-866. We don't have such an elegant phone number. It's just 866-889-8894. is our telephone number. Or you can drop into our live chat room, which is quite full today. A lot of great folks in there having conversation. And you can get there by going to tomhartmann.com and just click live chat, and that'll drop you into the chat room. Excuse me. And, of course, there's the message board, too, where you can have a message board. Another outrage from the Bush administration, the Small Business Administration, which was set up to support, guess what, Bullwinkle?
Small businesses.
Yes!
I got that one right. I missed it on the test. But
it was set up to support small businesses. What a surprise. By the way, I also want to thank Scott Forrester, who's engineering our program here today. And thanks, Scott, for being here in the studio with us. But it's the Small Business Administration, now increasingly we are discovering, is being used to funnel money away from small businesses. This is a new innovation from the Bush administration.
Well, this is part of the trickle-up theory.
Yes. Well, it's trickling up.
I think it's not trickling up. It's a full-blown torrent.
It's a geyser.
It's a geyser. It's,
they're taking money from
those
small
guys are taking our money.
That's right. Those geysers. Well said. And here are some of the corporations that are getting money from the Small Business Administration instead of real small businesses like my radio program or your comedy routine, you know, which are actually, you know, we do this for a living. This is
That's
a business
right.
for us.
That's right.
And
helping keep us small businesses.
Yes.
They're doing their part to keep small businesses small.
You would think that we would be able to go to the Small Business Administration and say, hey, how about $500,000? We'd like to do some advertising. No. Not under the Bush administration. No, the company's getting money from the Small Business Administration, Titan Corporation, Raytheon Company, General Dynamics Corporation, Booz Allen Hamilton, Inc., Archer Daniels Midland, Hewlett-Packard.
That's right. Yes, those are very small.
Yes.
Very small. And see, that is what's happening. I say that we have what they call a gold-collar crime wave.
Yes.
And these people are collaring the gold.
There you go.
And they're using, you know, as a spiritual master, I know all about energy. They're using their energy, that which the Chinese call qi,
yes,
to gain unfair advantage. This is called cheating.
Cheating.
Cheating, yes.
Absolutely. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Frank in Phoenix, Arizona on the line. Hey, Frank, welcome to the Tom Hartmann program.
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
I am great, but I'll get better. We're having a good time here.
Yeah, sounds good. What do you think about those people that that backed Toby Keith and blasted the Dixie Chicks for about the war effort and all of that?
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think that at a certain level, Frank, it was actually fairly predictable. And my take on it is that we actually had to cut those folks some slack, because the country really was attacked in a way that really surprised all of us. And it's normal and predictable, I think. I think it's a natural human response to have this sense of community, which we call patriotism, and to rally around and say, hey, you know, we really do want to be united in this moment. Where it fell down was not the Dixie Chicks. I mean, the anger got directed in the wrong place. It got directed toward the Dixie Chicks inappropriately. Where it fell down was George W. Bush. He was the one who let us down. He didn't step up to the plate and say, hey, we have a problem here. We have a problem that is the consequence of our own foreign policies blowing back on us. We have a problem that is the consequence of our behavior. And we have some criminals out there. Instead of doing what Bill Clinton did federal building in Oklahoma City got blown up, and saying there's a criminal loose, a madman, we've got to get this guy, he's nuts, and uniting everybody behind our efforts, George W. Bush turned Osama bin Laden into a superhero. I mean, this is a guy that had maybe 20,000 supporters. Now he has maybe 200 million, maybe yeah. 2 billion.
Yeah, but what about all, like, these radio stations, the media and all this turned against the Dixie Chicks? This
yeah.
is really where it started at, as far yeah. as the media and all of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And there, what happened there was you had a whole bunch of people in the right-wing talk radio business who saw an opportunity to make money and to hype something. And that's a tragedy. It's not good for democracy.
I think it was sad, you know, that they had to pay that in that way, you know, for standing up, you know, like Americans should be able and is allowed to.
Yeah.
And,
What's your take on it, Swami Vivekananda?
Well, did you know that all of the Dixie Chicks concerts were sold out after that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they did really, really well.
So
they did not. They did them no damage.
So well, that's good. If
people
that's
backed them up, because most of the people in this country, I think, are hip to this. But we don't see that because the media does not report.
Yeah. This media is really terrible. I hope somehow we can revert it back to
infotainment. Well, what we have to do is we have to go back to the policy that says that if you want to have a license to broadcast, or if you want to use the public rights of way to run your cable lines for cable TV, then you have to have public service programming, and that's called news. And the news has to be independent of any profit center. Frank, thanks a lot for the call and for raising a really important issue. I do appreciate it. We do have to move along here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program. We're here with Swami Beyondananda, wakeuplaughing.com, the website. And, maybe we could get the right-wing talk radio folks to start crushing Swami Beyondananda's CDs, right? You've got them on your website there.
Well, that's right. I've got one called Supreme Court Jester, which they might not like.
There you go. We could create a new enemy 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by.
Ah, it's a beautiful life.
Shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you.
Ah, yes. Welcome back, my friends, to the program. Swami, it's so nice to have you here in the studio.
Yes, and I appreciate the music because we need more Armstrong tactics and fewer strong arm tactics.
Well said. Steve Behrman, Swami Beyondananda, in the studio with us, wakeuplaughing.com. Jerry in North Carolina on the phone. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
I just wanted to mention something, and something you were just talking about reminded me of it.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to one of these national chains of companies that sells office supplies.
Right.
And then I found out through the internet that one of them particularly, which was Staples, had taken away all their advertising from Sinclair.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Because of Sinclair's forced editorial.
Yeah. I remember that. Yep.
And we need to be able to find out more and more who these companies are.
Right, and support the ones that are good and avoid the ones that are bad. This is the Blue State, Red State thing. Did you see the thing that Jeff Cohen had on CommonDreams.org yesterday? It's up today about Citgo?
No, I didn't.
If you're buying gasoline and you want that gasoline to go to the one country in the world that's exporting gasoline and using most of the profits from the gasoline to pay for health care for the poor, water and sanitation for the poor, and housing for the poor, buy Citgo because it is wholly owned by the Venezuelan oil company. And Hugo Chavez in Venezuela is using the profits from that Citgo gasoline sold in the United States to help the poor in Venezuela.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. Yeah, so, go check it out. In fact, it's go to commondreams.org. There's a whole article about it that Jeff Cohen wrote. And he's going to be a guest on our program in the next hour, so you could learn more about it.
One other quick thing. Did you know that Sears is one of the few companies that when the National Guardsmen that work for Sears get called up and sent overseas, they keep them on full salary?
God bless them. That's great. That is great, because that's not a common thing. And, Jerry, thanks for letting us know. I salute Sears and recommend folks to it. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. We'll have to take calls into the next hour right now because we're kind of out of time here, up against the top of the hour. We're going to have Jeff Cohen on with us, by the way, the founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting and the former producer for The Donahue Show, Phil Donahue on MSNBC. Interesting stories, war stories from the media, and he's going to tell us about the Citgo thing. And we're going to be talking with some folks, Lori Manning and Molly Bingham, about the true cost in blood of the war in Iraq. Swami Beyondananda has been with us. Maybe you'll be sticking around, Steve. We'll see how that, I'm not sure what your wife has in mind. But
well, that's between me and her. Right?
We'll find out, right? WakeUpLaughing.com. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, the website, if you want to drop into our live chat room and participate in some of the most thoughtful, insightful, wacky, wild, fun, and weird conversation on the entire, in all of inner space, outer space, and cyberspace. Patricia in Albuquerque is on the line. Hey, Patricia, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. You said that to give a call and let you know what we've said to our state representatives, and I'd like to do that.
Okay, or your United States Senator, or your
yes.
Congress, your member of Congress. Who did you call, Patricia?
Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma City.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the state of Oklahoma.
Right.
And I would just like to report to you and tell him that I told him that the Republican Party was embarrassing me. That they left me red-faced, embarrassed. I'm embarrassed to be an American.
And what kind of response did you get?
They said, okay, we'll let them know. And I gave them my name, and I told them I was from Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have any reserve in saying my name, where I was from,
yeah.
And just let them know exactly how I felt.
Good, good.
And it takes a lot for me to do that, Tom. I'm just learning how to do all this stuff. And through the help that you give people, the encouragement that you give people, you're teaching me how to do this.
Well, that's wonderful. Patricia,
yes.
Congratulations on being part of a participatory democracy. It is so important that we all do this, and I salute you for your patriotism and your love and concern for this great nation.
Tom, could I say to everyone in the chat room, I'm Joe's first, and everyone in the chat room is wonderful, and I'm enjoying myself and getting quite an education.
Okay, great, great. Yeah,
I think
you just did. Thank you, Patricia. I appreciate the call. It's great to hear from you, and thanks for speaking up and speaking out. Buck Rogers in Bandon, Oregon. Buck Rogers?
Yeah, Buck. First, I want to welcome you to Oregon.
Thank you.
And I want to urge all the Oregonians and everybody else, for that matter, to call our Republican Senator, Gordon Smith.
Right, and you can reach Gordon Smith at 1-877-SOB-USOB.
He's
right.
One of the Republicans still sitting on the fence on the nuclear option.
Yeah.
But what I called about was about a month ago, I think it was in the Register Guard, Eugene Register Guard, I read an article, a small article in the back pages, about Jimmy Carter and James Baker heading a committee to look into the fraud. And,
yeah, in the elections. Yeah.
Election. Is that, I haven't heard any more about it or read
You know, I don't know. And, in fact, we have Jeff Cohen on from FAIR, and I'm going to go to him in just a second, and I'll ask him if he knows about that, because I suspect he's more well-educated about that than I am. I you know, it's dropped off the media radar screen in the last little bit here, so
well,
I don't have an answer for you.
If
but
you hear anything more about it, I'd like you to
I'll check
it
into
on
it.
Air.
I'll check into it. And thanks for listening to us there in Coos Bay on KBBR.
I
do appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you.
Great radio station. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Jeff Cohen. Jeff is the founder of FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, FAIR.org, one of the finest websites out there, one of the best media organizations. He was also the senior producer for the Phil Donahue program on MSNBC, the one that got nuked, even though it was the most profitable and highly rated program on the entire network, because Phil Donahue was taking an anti-war position at the same time that GE, the big defense contractor, which owns NBC, of course, was saying, we want to be waving the flag like everybody else. But, Jeff, you've got a great piece in Common Dream. I saw it on commondreams.org. It was originally published elsewhere. Where was it originally published today?
Common Dreams is the first place that did it, but I think it's on Dissident Voice. It's on BuzzFlash.
Okay, so
it's all over.
It's been picked up all over. And about CITGO, tell us about this.
Well, people don't realize that CITGO is a wholly owned subsidiary of the National Oil Company of Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Venezuela is a country where the current president, Hugo Chavez, was elected. He's a populist, a little bit quirky, but populist. He's elected on a pledge that he would take the oil wealth of the country and address the problem of poverty in Venezuela, which in spite of this oil wealth for decades, 60% of the people are in poverty.
Yeah, Hugo Chavez is sort of a cross between Franklin Roosevelt and Ross Perot.
I think that might be right. You might throw in Jesse Jackson. I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
He's an unusual, charismatic figure. Now, some revolutions go bad, but for now, if all the people I know that I trust that have been to Venezuela and have written articles, some amazing things are happening in terms of subsidized food for the poor, literacy and education in neighborhoods that never had it, health clinics in neighborhoods that never had it. He's extremely popular with the poor. So all I was suggesting in the CommonDreams.org article is an easy way to protest Bush foreign policy. Remember, there was a military coup attempt in 2002 to overthrow Chavez.
Well, it wasn't just an attempt. We actually congratulated them on their success for a few days there.
He was out of power for a couple days, and the U.S. was, here we are preaching democracy around the world. The United States is the only government that praised the coup makers. Everywhere else in Latin America and the world, it was denounced. People went to the streets, and Chavez was reinstalled in power, and he since won an election. So what I suggested in Common Dreams is if you want to strike a blow week by week against Bush foreign policy and you want to do something that helps alleviate poverty in the world, one way of doing it is buying your gas at Citgo, because Citgo, some of the profits, dividends, will go directly into the government coffers in Venezuela, which is one of the few governments in the world that's really trying to address a monstrous problem of poverty within its country.
And it's remarkable. It's now, I don't want to get into the voting with your dollars, because that's not democracy. That implies that those with the most dollars have the most votes. But it's still it's conscious consumerism.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm getting mostly the response has been overwhelming. I've never written anything in my life that had such an immediate, huge reaction. And I've been writing for 30 years. But, you know, the only dissenting voices are people saying you can't change the world by doing this, or they misunderstood. They thought I was encouraging oil consumption. In my column, I talk about, you know, if you can bike or walk or mass transit to work, you should. This is for people that have no practical alternatives to gassing up their car.
Sure.
And if you're going to gas up your car, you know, go
buy
to a Citgo station. It's that simple. And I also pointed out, some people thought I was saying this is a way to shut down money to terrorists in the Middle East. Or, you know, it's not about that. Half of the crude oil that Citgo refines, it's a refining and marketing company in our country, wholly owned by the government of Venezuela, the Venezuelan state oil company. But at least half of the crude comes directly from Venezuela. A lot of the crude that Citgo uses comes from Mexico. And according to our our Department of Energy, only 4% of Citgo crude comes from the Middle East. So the point is Citgo profits and dividends are returned to Venezuela, and a lot of that money, billions of dollars, is now being invested in anti-poverty programs by the Chavez government in Venezuela.
So Citgo is not a publicly traded corporation?
I don't think so, no. It's a wholly owned subsidiary. It's sometimes called indirect and wholly owned, but, you know, every year they have to return dividends and profits to their parent company, which is the famous, you know, PDVSA, petroleum company of Venezuela.
Yeah, remarkable. Jeff, and that's a good point, and I want to make it. And by the way, if you go to commondreams.org and you read Jeff Cohen's piece, and it's right up there on the top of the page, and you read his piece in the article, is a hot link, a hypertext link, that you can click on that takes you to the Citgo website where you can plug in your zip code. In my case, I plugged in my zip code here in Portland, Oregon, and I found two Citgo stations that are within probably 5 miles of me. So, you know, it's poof, there they are.
And Tom, in the eastern part of Oregon has probably the fewest gas stations of Citgo, probably Oregon and Alaska. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're calling this a boycott. it's a way that by going to Citgo, you help the poor and you undermine Bush foreign policy in a little way each time you gas up. Mm-hmm. But on the eastern half of the country, where I live in upstate New York, there's more Citgos than probably any other station. It's the same, I think, in Massachusetts, Connecticut. I mean, I've been driving, doing lectures on the East Coast. There were Citgos everywhere I went.
So that's great. So it's easy.
Yeah.
And I only buy gas about once a month. I drive a Toyota Prius. And so, you know, I can make my monthly excursion and go a little out of my way to get gas.
Or make sure you time your daily routine and chores so that you swing by there and you don't use up extra gas in buying your Citgo gas.
Yeah, yeah. Now, let's move the conversation to a little larger frame here, if it's okay with you, Jeff.
Sure.
This is really one part of a much larger issue, which is how do we take back democracy? How can we be encouraging and fostering programs that ultimately work for we the people, which is what we're hoping is happening in Venezuela. And as you said, the verdict, you know, the jury is still out altogether, but so far, so good. But how can we do this in the United States? How can we work for political change in the United States, particularly when the experience that you had at MSNBC is still, from everything I can tell from watching network news, very much the case. When I watch the Sunday morning news shows, I see, you know, for every one liberal, I see four, five, six conservatives, and not just conservatives, hardcore right-wing extremist conservatives, the Pat Buchanans and the Tony Blankleys of the world. They're the ones you see there. And if they have a liberal, it'll be, you know, Eleanor Clift. I mean, somebody who's you know, competent, but she used to be called a moderate. And, you know, what's going on and what can be done?
Well, I believe that great things are happening in the media world. They're just not happening in the half a dozen corporations that own big chunks of it and are sitting on the windpipe of the First Amendment. I mean, Air America is soaring. Pacifica and Amy Goodman is soaring. The Tom Hartman Show. CommonDreams.org. These websites and blogs have never been bigger. The good news is that beginning around the time of September 11th in its wake and the run-up to the Iraq War, which was based on deceptions largely swallowed by the major media, people have been turning to alternatives and alternative media. And there's nothing that you can do as an activist trying to be a pro-democracy activist that's more important than not only getting your information from independent media, but then spreading the word about that outlet to people that don't already know about it. I was just at the big media reform conference in St. Louis over the weekend. 2,500 people were all sharing information about how can you help me build up my independent media outlet so I can reach new people, not the already convinced, and how can I help you build yours? And it was an incredible sharing, and I just think that the independent media is the way to go. It's how our country was started, the pamphleteers, the Tom Paines. So, yes, I agree with you, Tom. To build up our democracy, media activism is a key part of it.
And support the outlets. If you're listening to some, you know, Amy Goodman on public radio, support that station. If you're listening to this program on commercial radio or Air America or whatever, you know, Ed Schultz on commercial radio, support their advertisers and let them know. Let the radio stations know. Jeff Cohen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I do appreciate it. Keep up the great work.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
There's a brand new dance just hit this town.
And welcome back to your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity, the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman radio program. Our telephone number, 866-889-8894, and we will be getting to your calls in just a moment. First, I want to get the report, our report for the day from Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., our Washington, D.C. Bureau correspondent. Hey, Victoria.
Hello.
Hey. Had to push the on button there. Sorry about that. Now you're on.
All right.
So what's up?
It's Victoria Jones first, and I think in about an hour's time you'll have Ellen Ratner, so you're getting a twofer today.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes, indeed. I attended this morning a press conference with Charles Schumer, Lieberman, Obama, many others about judicial nominees, but more importantly on filibusters, and Ellen can report on that. But very briefly, the gist is that they do think that there are people behind the scenes working. However, now that Frist and Reid have cut off talks, they're very concerned this is going to move forward. But more fun than that, I attended the Senate Homeland Security Committee's subcommittee on investigations hearing this morning, at which counsel for the subcommittee testified, and then controversial British MP George Galloway testified. And I have to tell you that I have never in my life been more entertained in a Senate hearing. And in fact, I would recommend to your listeners that they go first to C-SPAN and listen to this, and second of all, in a couple of hours, go to the Talk Radio News Service website where we're posting his testimony. He was blistering and funny and outrageous, and I've never seen anybody just not kowtow to these people. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's right or not, but he was great.
I have the BBC website up. One of the folks in the chat room provided me with a link to it just a few minutes ago. The difference is Donald Rumsfeld met him, the Saddam Hussein, to sell him guns and maps, the better to target those guns. I met him to try and bring about an end to sanctions, suffering, and war. This guy was not taking any prisoners here.
That was just the beginning. I mean, he went personally after Norm Coleman when Coleman tried to go after him for allegedly taking money. He said, "Well, I've been to your website, Senator, and I'm quite sure that you don't know what any of these people have done with the money, that you know where they got the money that they've given you." And he talked about vast campaign contributions. He had no concerns about what he was going to say sounded. He said, for example, these are just a couple of things I managed to write down. He was talking to Coleman, and he was making an example about what people are saying. He said, the neocon websites in which you are such a hero, Senator, that's just the way a sentence would open with him.
Wow.
I gave my heart and soul to stop you committing the disaster you did in Iraq. I told the world that the premise on which you went to war was a pack of lies. Senator, this is the mother of all smokescreens. Look at the first 14 months when you were in charge in Iraq, when $8.8 billion went missing. He goes on, and then he talks about the real sanction busters were your companies in connivance with your government.
Wow, this is all in the context of the oil for food so-called scandal that the right wing is ginning up in America.
That's right. That's right, and that's basically what he's saying. And even Senator Levin, there was only Levin and Coleman there, even Senator Levin was absolutely livid with him because he wouldn't answer questions.
Really?
But he didn't. Yes, yes.
Carl
absolutely.
Levin.
Levin and Coleman on the same page.
Wow. Wow.
It's really worth listening to the sound. His opening statement alone was worth the price of admittance.
Yeah, and you're gonna slice and dice this and put it on your website there.
We are
affiliate stations.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll grab that off your website, and I don't think we'll have it in time for today, but certainly we can play it tomorrow for our listeners.
It's worth playing. It is. It was really quite an extraordinary event. I actually have British journalists saying to me, "Is this how it normally is in front of a Senate committee?" And I'm saying, "No, this is not normal."
No, this is more like Prime Minister's questions.
Exactly, and that's what I was telling people earlier today. I was saying, listen, you know, this guy does politics a different way from us.
Right.
He pulls no punches and takes no prisoners.
Right,
so
this is how politics is done in the UK.
It's very interesting.
Remarkable. Well, that's great. And then Ellen is going to call us in the next hour with an update on the nuclear option debate. Okay, great. Thanks so much, Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you for providing the context and the information and for your report. Great, always great to hear from you. Have a wonderful day, Victoria. Okay, take good care. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We'll be right back.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I've got the Galloway hearing here, and I've got an audio clip for it, but I am unable to figure out how to feed it into this board. So we'll have to have it a little later on. Anyway, welcome back. Our telephone line's Zach in Provo, Utah with us. Hey, Zach, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
I was just going to comment on something you said yesterday mm-hmm. about the death toll in Iraq.
Yeah.
And I was just saying, going to say that that should really need to include the 300,000 or so people that were killed and are being killed in the Sudan due to the fact that since our military is now, for lack of a better word, stuck in Iraq, we don't have the option, I don't know whether we would anyway, but we don't have the option of doing something about it.
Well, you know, Colin Powell, actually, I think we do, frankly. I don't think that it would take that many forces. But Colin Powell went to the Sudan and came back and said it's a genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, here's a guy who was the Secretary of State of the United States, the guy who's theoretically in charge of our foreign policy, mm-hmm. and says this to not just the United States, not just within the administration, but says it out loud to the world. And what does the Bush administration do? Junior gets on his dirt bike and goes for a ride, and everybody else goes ho-hum, and they find somebody to replace Colin Powell.
Exactly. I mean, when was it? It was before, was it before or after the Iraq invasion that he went before, I think he went before the UN and actually said that.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, so there's no oil in the Sudan. And there is no glory to be gained. George Jr. can't make himself look like he's a superhero by taking on the Sudanese government. It's one of those things where the only benefit to the United States to intervening in the Sudan is that we will save the lives of human beings. And that's not one of the conservative values that this administration holds high.
Exactly.
Tragically.
Mm-hmm.
Tragically. So, you know, it's...
I mean, the fact that it's been interesting, though, because as you say, the reason for going to Iraq, since it has shifted so much, to now it's spreading freedom, apparently that's only freedom for oil-producing countries.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
it's a tough one. It's a tough one. It's all of us sitting here, members, you know, citizens of the United States, voters in the United States, and feeling like, you know, how can we have something? How can we do something about this? How can we say? And it's like, what do you do? What do you do? Well, you know, of course, you'll let your elected officials know that you actually do care about what's going on in Darfur and in the Sudan, and that something must be done about that. And call 1-877-SOB-USOB and ask for your member of Congress and bring that issue up. But it's tragic that our foreign policy has become so myopic, it's become so driven, and it's not, truth be told, this is nothing new. It's been more or less that way throughout much of the history of the United States, but nonetheless, it's particularly that the case now. It is so driven by corporate agendas and by oil and, you know, and by what's going to make George W. Bush look better or more powerful. It's like Ronald Reagan, you know, invading Grenada. He needed a war. He needed a distraction. He was in trouble with Iran-Contra. They were investigating, blah-de-blah-de-blah. So let's have a war. Let's find a country that can't fight back. It'll occupy the news for a few weeks. This is what Lee Atwater was brilliant at, and he taught Karl Rove how to do it. Of course, Karl Rove was actually involved in those campaigns, and on it goes. Zach, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, JD in Chico. Is that Chico, California, JD?
Yes, it is.
Hey, JD, what's up?
Well, I was listening to you, and I use this number, 877-SOB-USOB, all
uh-huh.
the time.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who owns it?
No, I don't.
Do you know what they do with the information?
No, I don't.
The reason I'm asking is because the U in there,
yeah,
that's a Karl Rove, you know, type thing, because they had, you know, 10 numbers they could have chose from. That USOB, I questioned that from the time I first heard you mention it. So that's my first question. The second thing I want
to... Well, my understanding, J.D., and I know the reason that you're asking this is because if somebody has a toll-free number, then when somebody calls in, if they have caller ID, they can figure out who called them. And in fact, you get a, you know, a list on your bill at the end of the month of all the inbound calls. And so some organizations will call, you know, just have machines, for example, call people and say, you may have won a free prize, call this toll-free number. And you call the toll-free number and you get some weird thing or it hangs up or whatever. All they wanted was your phone number to know that you're a real person, then they can telemarket it to you. But my understanding is that this toll-free number, this 877-SOB-USOB, is the old Senate office building toll-free number that they put into place for members of Congress and their staffs to call into the office, you know, when they're out on the road and not have to pay for it because it's not publicized.
My question is still the same, though.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I don't think that they're building any nefarious lists with it. But, you know, if you want to call anonymously with caller blocking, you can call the regular phone number 202-225-3121.
Right. I use this number. I'm not questioning that, but yeah. The other thing I wanted to say there, and I have a question that I think is really important, but
sure.
What's going on here is, you know, we've seen this thing orchestrated. When Tim LaHaye was on one of the women's show, early show on Air America Radio a few weeks ago, he used this word, we. If you go back and listen to that transcript and how he used the word we.
We should inform our listeners who Tim LaHaye is. He's the co-author
right.
of the Left Behind series and one of the great proponents of bringing the world to an end so Jesus will
right.
reappear.
They're using Revelation as their script.
Right.
And it's orchestrated, only they're using real bullets. Now my question is, seriously, my question is, we have 3 days. When does that 3 days end? I'd like to know, and I think everybody should know, and I think everybody should just stay home.
You mean the 3 days of darkness that they talk about in Revelation?
The 3 days that the Muslims have given us. Now, this thing with the Newsweek, that was all orchestrated.
Wait a minute. Maybe I'm missing something, J.D. Tell me about the 3 days here.
They said that they were giving us 3 days, that we, you know, these deaths that occurred that... We know how the CIA orchestrates stuff all over, and the deaths that have occurred over there, the riots, and they're talking about
right.
Newsweek, and they're saying that Newsweek caused this when we know that it was revealed in 01 and 02 and 03, as Randy has revealed to us.
Sure.
So we know this. Now, they have given us 3 days. They have
three.
Put out a
who is,
3 days.
Who is the they? I've apparently missed this news story. I'm sure the folks in the chat room will illuminate me. But was it an institution?
It was the what do they when they you know, I really don't know because I've just heard it referred to on, you know, the radio.
Yeah.
Where they say that because we put their Quran in the toilet.
Right.
From some point, they gave us 3 days. To give up somebody,
yeah,
or they were going to do X, Y, Z.
Well, we committed a crime right? that's punishable by death in these
so
countries.
So if we have 3 days, can we find out when it is? Because
Well, that's a good question, J.D. Yeah, okay, I'll track down everything I can on that and let you know what they say.
Thank you.
So,
I love
yeah.
you. I love your show and everything you're doing.
Well,
thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. It's great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. Mike in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Mike?
Okay, it's kind of connecting to the previous call in a way. I'm really, really ashamed of Newsweek, and I'm ashamed of the American people buying into this Karl Rove-generated garbage, which is essentially a repeat of what they did with Dan Rather.
See, I'm guessing that what happened was that Rove went to the senior officers, the senior officials at Newsweek, and Newsweek has a contractual agreement with NBC, by the way, you know, big defense contractor and the company that kicked Phil Donahue off the air. And that they went to Newsweek and they said, if you want to continue to have access to the White House, if you want to continue to have your reporters be called on when the president speaks, which you must have or you will be out of business as a news organization. If you want to continue to have that, you're going to have to take the heat for this because this administration will not take the heat for it because George W. Bush, George Bush Jr. never, ever takes responsibility for anything.
Right.
And Newsweek said, okay, well, if that's the price we have to pay to play, then that's the price we'll pay.
Right.
That's my take on it.
I agree with you, but I think it's high time that we, as the American public, start fighting back and call our local stations, call our local papers, call our local radio stations, and say, look, if I can find out that this is a lie, you know, that what you're telling us, this retraction is basically a face-saving maneuver.
Well, it's
you know,
not a face-saving maneuver. It's an administration-saving maneuver. It's got nothing to do with saving Newsweek. It's got to do with Newsweek sucking up to the Bush administration.
I agree. No, it's a face-saving maneuver for the administration.
Right.
That's without question. But we should get our own local media, and especially NBC, because they are connected to Newsweek, and say, listen, you people have a responsibility to us as the media. You're the only group of people that are named in the Constitution as having a special right to provide us with the news, and you are shielded for it, supposedly.
Yeah.
Well, stand up to it, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Well, let them know. And in fact, if you go to nytimes.com or if you go to Newsweek's website, and in fact, I encourage you to, and it's probably newsweek.com. I'd be amazed if it was anything else, but you can certainly Google Newsweek. On their websites, they list the telephone numbers of their offices, of their news offices and their executive offices, and they generally list the email addresses of their editors. And I encourage people to send them an email and, perhaps more important, to call them, because it's so easy to ignore email. You know, there's so much spam and everything to begin with. And call them and say, hey, you know, what's going on? Why are you guys backing away from this? This you know, there's so many other sources that are corroborating this. Now, what I find really interesting, Mike, is that Newsweek, as far as I, you know, parsing this thing out, and what was fascinating to me, let me just digress for a moment, what was fascinating to me is that, as far as I can tell, the only guy who's actually accurately reported this is Keith Olbermann. At least
right.
Watching the news yesterday, he was the only one who I could tell who was actually telling the truth about what was going on. But what Olbermann was reporting and what I was getting from this whole thing is that Newsweek is not saying, no, this didn't happen. Newsweek is saying our source is unwilling to prove, you know, to give us hard proof. I mean, our sources is now uncertain about this. But, you know, they're and they could just as easily say there are other sources. But they're not saying it didn't happen. And they're unfortunately they're not saying it did happen too, but they're not saying it didn't happen, and what's happening is that the Bushies, the Karl Rove and company, are trying to spin this the same way they did the CBS Dan Rather story to say, oh, the entire story is wrong because one piece of the story is wrong. And I'm sorry, I don't think the Muslim world is going to buy it. They could fool most of America about George Bush's service record, George Bush Jr.'s service record, because it was just the American voters. But you've got a billion Muslims PO'd at you right now. They're not going to buy it. They're not going to buy it, and they're not watching NBC, ABC, and CBS.
Exactly. And also, as an adjunct to this, what I find totally amazing, I mean, jaw-droppingly amazing, is we have Simple Scotty here calling the America's most faithful lapdog ally, the UK, a bunch of liars. Oh, we don't believe your memo. Excuse me.
Yeah, Olbermann on his blog this morning was calling for Scotty's resignation. This is incredible to me that a national newsman, you know, Keith Olbermann, in my mind, is becoming the Walter Cronkite of our day. I never thought I would have said that. Well, Amy Goodman, in my mind, is really the Walter Cronkite of our day. But in terms of commercial mass media, the only guy out there who is speaking any semblance of truth, and even Olbermann is very often, you know, towing the corporate line, as it were. But by and large, I'd say Keith Olbermann has got it straight, and it's just incredible to me. You know, why isn't anybody else following his lead? His ratings have got to be skyrocketing.
Well, because we've become dumbed down as a nation, we've become pacified as a people, and we become atomized as a society. Everybody is looking out for themselves. You know, the hell with the rest of society. Let me get what I can get and screw everybody else.
Yeah, and it's time to say enough of that. Enough of that. I think Americans are waking up to this. Mike, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks for your comments. Well said. Kate in Humboldt County, California on the line. Hey, Kate, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I wanted to say that I'm getting more and more concerned about what the rest of the world thinks of us, especially Muslims. And
yeah, because they tend, if they get really upset, to come over and kill us.
Exactly. And they, as you said, they don't listen to our news. They're not listening to your program and hearing those of us call in who are, you know, like-minded. And they don't know that the election was a fraud.
Yeah.
So for all they know, all of the people who, you know, feel cheated out of the election results, for all they know, we don't exist.
Right.
And so it's one thing you've been encouraging everyone, as you should be, for all of us to be actively calling our representatives, et cetera, doing what we can in the media. But what about what we need to do to represent ourselves to the rest of the world as the American public, like we did in, you know, protesting the Vietnam War? And I think partly a problem we face is that we're so spread out. And, you know, we can't all go to the central city like in the smaller countries where everybody can go there and protest.
Right.
So if we have a protest here in Eureka, California, it's just like big deal, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't get covered.
Even if it's happening all over the world, it doesn't seem to matter. But I think we as the American public need to begin to express to the world that we aren't going along with this.
Yeah. Yeah, and people are starting to stand up and speak out, and it's not taking the form that it took during the Vietnam War, although it may at some point in time, but the Bush administration's plan to deal with this, and they're very clear about this, is to impoverish us. If they can do away with the middle class, and you had a lot of comfortable middle-age or middle-class college students back during the Vietnam War, who,
yeah.
You know, and you could go to college for free in the state of California, for example, and you had a lot of college students who had the time to go out and do something, to speak out and speak up. And increasingly, college students are terrified. Their student loans, college is so expensive, and they don't want to get their student loans cut off, and they know that the federal government has something to do with it. People are afraid of losing their jobs. It's like, get rid of the middle class, and you get rid of political protest. And that's what Jefferson warned us about. That's what these guys are up to. Kate, I got to go. Thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Representative John Conyers' brave report on the massive irregularities. This is from one of the reviews, by the way, on Amazon.com, as I recall. He wrote, John Conyers' brave report on the massive irregularities in Ohio's 2004 presidential election signal a strong and urgent warning for all concerned citizens. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. This guy posted this review on Amazon.com, reviewing the book by John Conyers, which is the story, the Conyers report, you know, what happened in Ohio. And he says, while Republicans in the House and Senate were quick to dismiss the report, saying that there's no such thing as a perfect election, they failed to understand that all irregularities favored Bush. From under-equipped precincts in African-American communities, an illegal closure of a counting center in Warren County, and large-scale destruction of voter registration, Preserving Democracy, that's the title of the book by John Conyers, Preserving Democracy makes it clear to all that no election remains secure as long as we allow this blank to continue in our country. And now what Amazon.com did is that where the blank is, they put a little parenthesis, three dots, an ellipsis, and a closed parenthesis. But the original review had the word fraud. Amazon.com deleted fraud from this thing, as long as we allow this fraud to continue in our country. Amazing. From the review of Preserving Democracy by John Conyers. Doug in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm just calling to give you information about what that lady was talking about, the three-day scenario.
Sure.
The other day I was listening to the news. I listen to all talk radio constantly, and their clerics, there's a bunch of them, I mean, we're talking maybe half the country, have told the media that if the people that are involved with dumping the Korean down the toilet are not giving up, they are going to declare a holy war.
This in Afghanistan? This in Afghanistan? In Afghanistan?
In Afghanistan.
Yeah, okay.
And it kind of got buried in the news, I think, because if it does happen, the Bush administration is going to have a hard time explaining it.
Yeah, well, and this might be why Newsweek is backpedaling so fast. The folks in the chat room are sending me some information on this, too. I'm going to educate myself over the 6 minutes at the top of the news here.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure. We got ten seconds.
I called you a long time ago and was telling people about the movie Mitigan,
yeah.
Omega Code 2.
Yeah.
It's basically the scenario of what the guy who wrote Left Behind, their whole idea of how everything's going to play out. So if
yeah.
you want to check it out, it's kind of hard to find, but it's Omega Code 2.
Omega Code 2. Thanks a lot, Doug. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California and Oregon to West Virginia, North Carolina. Streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, coast to coast, border to border, in 29 states on cable systems on CRNI Digital, and beaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Live 365's American FM. Welcome back to our program. What is happening in Iraq? Are we getting the whole story? What's really going on there? And what is the true casualty? What is the true cost, in terms of human lives and human blood? Lori Manning is the director of the Center for Women in Uniform and the Hire a Vet Project. Captain Manning joined the WREI staff in May of 1977 as director of the Women in the Military Project, the Hire a Vet Program, after serving more than 25 years in the U.S. Navy. She's also served on the staffs of the Chief of Legislative Affairs, Chief of Naval Personnel, Commander-in-Chief Naval Forces Europe, and Chief of Naval Operations. That's quite a CV, Lori. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be here.
And great to have you here. Tell me, what is happening in Iraq? Are we getting a straight story on the casualties?
I think we're getting the straight story on U.S. casualties. I don't think we're getting much of a story at all on Iraqi casualties and casualties from places like NGOs and journalists and that sort of thing.
And why would that be?
That would probably interfere with the ability to keep doing what the administration wants to be doing there.
You might put a crimp in the Bushies style.
Something like that, yes.
and so, I mean, we're running around the world. Here we got George Bush going, democracy's on a march, you know. And yet we have thrown Al Jazeera out of Iraq. We've shut down some 100 newspapers so far. We've thrown people in prison for speaking out against us and against the government. And now we discover that even the people who are dying there are not being reported. How can this be?
If I knew, I'd fix it. I think partly is the American public is not paying nearly enough attention to what is going on over there. They ought to be raising holy hell.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I think that we're not paying attention to it is that we are being, you know, lulled to sleep. We've got a media that's more interested in Michael Jackson and the runaway bride than in what's going on in Iraq. And
we have an administration that makes it very difficult to get information. They never let you have it the easy way. You've got to go around the block and around the world to get something that's you're sitting right next to you.
Now, how do they do that? I mean, there are reporters, there are news organizations. Mm-hmm. The NBC is a multi-billion-dollar defense contractor, or is owned by GE, a multi-billion-dollar defense contractor. They certainly have the resources to find out what's going on in the world. I'm sure they do for their corporate programs. They probably have a very sophisticated corporate espionage, or whatever you call it, intelligence
sure.
program.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they find out what's going on and report it on NBC News?
Well, I think we all know that the news business has become just that, a bottom-line business. And
the infotainment business.
And infotainment. And why spend resources when it's not going to add money into the corporate block, you know? That kind of operation does cost money.
We're talking with Lori Manning, the director of the Center for Women in Uniform and the Hire a Vet Projects. Lori, tell us about the Center for Women in Uniform.
Well, the Center for Women in Uniform has been in existence at RI for about 15 years, and I've been running it.
At RI?
At RI, the Women's Research and Education Institute.
Okay.
Which used to be the research arm of the Women's Congressional Caucus.
Okay, which is located in Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C. We are now independent, nonpartisan, and we follow very closely many things dealing with American women, but the prospects Now, when I talk about it, it's at a policy and a law level. We watch the policies and law as they affect women in the military and women veterans.
Right.
To make sure they're getting a fair shake, that the facts and not emotions are driving decisions. And we're one of the only feminist groups in the country that looks out for military women, too.
It's interesting. I think a lot of folks, when they think of women in the military, they think of the tailhook scandal. They think of the debate about whether women should be in combat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not much more than that. I mean, those mm-hmm. there's maybe I'm missing something, but it seems like those are the kind of the two big talking points. But I'm sure there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more going on. What are the dimensions of women in the military, particularly as it relates to this conflict in Iraq that we need to know about?
Yeah, the interesting thing about women in the conflict in Iraq is that they are, you know, and this is separate from what anybody thinks about the conflict in Iraq, because we can certainly support them without supporting the war. They are doing things that military women have never done before, and it's because of the nature of the insurgency.
It's because there's no front.
There's no front, so that they have been having to defend themselves when they've been attacked in a way that, you know, before we didn't give the women guns, so even if they were attacked, they couldn't shoot back. But they are having to defend themselves. They are able to do that. They're able to protect their male counterparts. And also because of the Muslim culture in Iraq, we need women there. If we're at a checkpoint and a woman comes through, we certainly can't have an American male soldier checking her.
Yeah.
Or when we visit people's houses, having women there helps keep things at a nonviolent level, and it sort of reassures the Iraqi women and children that might be living in that house.
Now, how many countries in the world allow or encourage, or whatever the appropriate word would be, women to engage in combat operations, you know, just right across the board, no restrictions, as opposed to the countries that say that women can do certain jobs but can't participate in combat?
Well, we're one of the countries that say they can't participate in combat.
Right.
But many countries actually let them participate across the boards. Canada, New Zealand, South Africa.
Israel.
Israel does lets them into more ground combat jobs than we do, but there are a few things that are off limits.
I see.
Most European countries do. England is about like us. Australia is about like us, although the Australians allow women on submarines. Even countries like Singapore are very, very liberal in what women are allowed to do. It's the U.S. is not at the forefront. We have more women because we have a bigger military, but we are not at the forefront in allowing women.
We have more women numerically. Do we have more women as a percentage?
Yes. Well, not necessarily. I think probably South Africa has the highest percentage of women, and that's because for many reasons. We are in the top 5 or 10. Which it's about 15% overall, although it's a much higher percentage of something like the Air Force, where essentially all jobs are open to women. That's pushing into the 20%.
Right.
Versus the Marine Corps, where not much is open to women, and that's done at 6%.
So, Laurie Manning, what has been the result of this? What has been the result in those nations where women are allowed to participate, essentially co-equal with men, mm-hmm. versus the United States, where they're not? Do their armies work better or worse than ours?
That's an interesting question, because most of them started later than we did, so their women are not real senior yet.
Uh-huh.
And also, many of them haven't really had women doing much, you know, or not just women. Their militaries have been pretty much doing peacekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
And in those operations in Bosnia and Kosovo, there are many European women involved with peacekeeping. And women from some of the Asian militaries have been in some of the African countries, and it's worked very well. It's particularly effective in peacekeeping when you're dealing with a local population, too, where there are local women. The women will sometimes be keeping an eye open for things that perhaps the men wouldn't see that would affect women, like, say, prostitution or some of the children's issues. That's a generalization, and I don't mean that men aren't concerned about those things, but having both sexes helps to see more and more of the big picture.
You would think so. Does your organization or do you take a position on whether women should be involved in combat, or are you simply advocating for, you know, women in general, regardless of the politics du jour?
We believe women should be allowed to do everything that they are physically, mentally, emotionally qualified to do. That the mere fact that somebody is a male or somebody is a female shouldn't be used as a barrier to doing what they otherwise are capable of doing.
And Laurie Manning, what specific problems or challenges does the Iraq theater and these kinds of conflicts that the Bush administration seems so hell-bent for leather and getting us into more of as time goes on. Let us hope and pray not, but nonetheless, what sort of unique problems does this present for women? I think, you know, the only women's faces so far that have been put on the Iraq conflict have been Jessica Lynch, Janet Karpinski, and Lindy England, you know, this poor unfortunate woman. And I suspect that all three of those are not characteristic of typical women in the Iraqi theater.
No, and there are about 17,000 of them over there right now, and many more thousands who have been there previously. The particular problems have been just things like getting women to drink enough water so they don't develop urinary tract infections. I think the army itself is astonished at how very well the women have been able to defend themselves, to adapt to living in some very rugged field conditions, and those kinds of things. The Department of Veterans Affairs, as time goes by, will be following a cadre of the women and the men too, of course, from this war to see if over the long term if there are any differences in how men and women react to post-traumatic stress disorder or those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Some of that information will take time to sort through.
Does your organization or do you know of any organizations that involve themselves in or advocate for gay women in the military?
We certainly do advocate for gay women in the military, although they are part of all women, but we certainly support gays serving in the military. Mm-hmm. The Service Members Legal Defense Network and the Center for Minorities in the Military, Sexual Minorities in the Military at the University of California at Santa Barbara are two of the biggest organizations that work specifically for gay men and women in the military.
So how has don't ask, don't tell, and these policies, this sort of wishy-washy compromise policy that came out of the early Clinton initiatives, how has this affected lesbians in the United States military?
Well,
or gays in general?
Gays in general. The academics who have studied it, and there are a good number, tend to think that forcing people to keep their mouths closed makes them susceptible to things like
blackmail.
Blackmail, particularly on the women, pressure for give me sex or I'm going to turn you in as a lesbian, sorts of things.
Yeah.
And the British, who within the past few years lifted their ban on gays serving in the military, have found that there has been a reduction in sexual harassment claims by women because they don't have to be afraid whether they're straight or gay that somebody's going to tar them as gay and
right.
wreck their careers.
As we've seen in the workplace in America over mm-hmm. the last 10 or 20 years, as it's become more accepted, you know, mm-hmm. to be out.
And everybody knows that there are thousands of gay men and women serving in the military. For
yeah.
Pete's sake.
Well, they're everywhere. They're our brothers, our sisters, our friends, our neighbors. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
It's, you know, welcome to the
welcome
human family.
Welcome to the world.
There
and,
you go.
And you know, let's have the same rules for gay people as for straight people as to who they can, you know, about sexual conduct in the workplace and
well
be done with it.
Well said. Laurie Manning, the director of the Center for Women in Uniform and the Hire a Vet Project. Laurie, very quickly, is there a website people can go to for more information on the work you're doing?
www.wrei.org.
Thank you so much, Laurie, for being
Thank
with
you.
Us today. Have a great one.
You
it's
too.
It's
Bye.
The Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past, or 20 minutes past the hour.
For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Okay, don't leave that volume down on me. a question, please. I was
sure.
watching the Los Angeles news this Sunday, and they were mentioning how Mayor Han had pulled more jobs away from places like Portland and other places and brought them to Los Angeles. The question I have is since job creation is such a big thing in this country, is what we're calling job creation the pulling from one job to another city a job creation.
Yeah, well, it is to the Bush administration, but it's not in the real world, as you know, Ed.
is that the way they're counting it?
Correct. If you shut down a factory in Pennsylvania, a good union factory, and you open one in a cheap labor state, and you employ the same number of people, they will and after time, those people who are unemployed become discouraged workers. 18 months down the road, they're not even counted anymore. Whereas the people in the new factory, those are new workers. That's a wonderful
thing.
Tom,
you're not a good conservative. You don't employ the same number of people.
Well, of course not. Anyhow, good point, Ed. Ed, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Helen Ratner's with us with the Talk Radio News Service with an update on the nuclear option. Hey, Helen.
Well, hi. It looks as if they are trying to decide which of the two judges to bring up first, whether it's Janice Brown or Priscilla Owen, and that is what the Republicans are planning on bringing on to test their option. Now, we know that Senator Warner is teetering, Specter is teetering, McCain is against the nuclear option, so that is really where the folks are. The Republicans are planning on doing a radio row on Tuesday and Wednesday with all their friends next week, not this week, although the nuclear option may come up this week. I mean, well, it is going to come up tomorrow or the next day with Janice Brown and Priscilla Owen. The Democrats are now thinking of doing their own radio kind of row, not necessarily doing it where people come into town, but people like you, et cetera, who are either independents or Democrats, actually come in and are able to get many of the senators, the Democratic senators, on this issue. The other issue is whether they start to target states such as Virginia, such as Pennsylvania, to keep the pressure on Warner and Specter. McCain is so against the nuclear option that he will not move. He is already in their court.
Wow. Wow. So, that's a bunch. How exactly do you think this thing is going to play out?
Unless they get the vice president's vote on this, I think they are so close to not having the votes that they need, that 51 votes, that I don't think they're going to get it.
So, but they're going to win anyway. I mean, isn't that the bottom line? They're going to say, "Hey, you know, we tried. We made a noble effort to the right wing." They're going to say this to their.
They did the same thing on the gay marriage.
Yeah,
they tried. They made a valiant effort. They didn't do it.
Right.
I don't understand what the political gain is for them to bring it up unless they really do have the votes, except to throw meat to their wing of the party to say we've really tried and look what we're doing, and you know, and we need to defeat and to get money to raise to defeat moderate Republican senators, the Rockefeller Republicans.
Well, and Democrats. I think there's considerable gain here in being martyrs. I mean, those make the very best fundraising campaigns, you know, the martyrdom campaigns.
Well, that's right. But again, there is, I was just at this blogging conference yesterday, and one of the guys who has developed all of these blogs that and sites, you know, like Bring On John Ashcroft or, you know, all those kinds of specialized niche sites said that their goal is to go after Democrats and defeat moderate Republicans. So the Republican Party is not happy to have these people in their party. They want them out.
Interesting. Okay, well, it's the Stalinization of the Republican Party and ultimately of America, in my opinion. It's going on right now before our eyes. Helen, thanks for the report.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you, and keep up the great work. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Helen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you in the place where smart people get their news.
But, Dad...
Tyler, we've been over this 3 times. There'll be no adults at Ed's house Friday night. No party for you.
But the whole class is invited.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy. But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
You were so stubborn.
Well, now you know where you got it from.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more...
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back Tom Hartman here with you, looking for White House accountability. Yes, looking for White House accountability. The Center for American Progress, an excellent report here, and this really gets to the core of this issue. I'm sure that all the right-wing talk shows are going to be going on and on and on and on and on, ad infinitum, about how this is irresponsible reporting by Newsweek. This is terrible, you know, Newsweek is up to no good, blah 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 blah. Yeah. Well, in response to a drumbeat of criticism and an inability to substantiate his chief claim, desecration of the Quran by the U.S. military, Newsweek magazine has now retracted an article that was, quote, that was blamed for inciting widespread protests and riots in the Muslim world, where at least 17 people were killed in the ensuing violence. Condi Rice, maybe we should call her Condi Reich, saying, I hope everybody will step back and take a look at how they handled this, everybody. Newsweek has accepted responsibility for any reporting error. Now it's time for the White House to take its own responsibility. One major, in the Center for American Progress points out, one major reason for tarnished U.S. credibility in the world, the White House has abdicated all accountability for the atrocities committed at prisons in Guantanamo Bay, Iraq, or Afghanistan, ignoring the responsibility for those in charge who set the conditions for abuse, and instead blaming a few bad apples. Only the soldiers at the bottom of the chain, like PSC Lindy England and Specialist Charles Grainer Jr., who were photographed at Abu Ghraib, and Army Reserve Brigadier General Janice Karpinski, have been held responsible for their actions. Abusive methods were allowed to occur at Guantanamo because of an atmosphere. Grainer and Army Reserve Brigadier General Janice Karpinski have been held responsible for their actions. Abusive methods were allowed to occur at Guantanamo because of an atmosphere that has been described as a legal, physical, and moral black hole. In late January of this year, President Bush said, torture is never acceptable, nor do we hand over people to countries that do torture. Yeah, right. Not only has Bush done nothing to stop hundreds of individuals from being taken by CIA agents through the process of extraordinary rendition, where detainees are transported to other countries for interrogation, he signed a directive to make it easier. Also referred to as outsourcing torture, the CIA has chosen the most common destinations for rendered subjects or suspects to be Egypt, Morocco, Syria, and Jordan, all of which have been cited for human rights violations by the State Department and are known to torture suspects. And then we get Queen Noor from Jordan on the Larry King Show. This is Newsweek. There's always those awful Newsweek folks. General Ricardo Sanchez, who was in charge, as I said, in charge in Iraq during Abu Ghraib, got off scot-free. Pentagon General Counsel William J. Haynes IV, who led the group of attorneys responsible for the memos contending the president, wasn't bound by laws prohibiting torture, and that government agents who might torture prisoners at his direction couldn't be prosecuted by the Justice Department, was just renominated by Bush to become a federal judge. And then Assistant Attorney General J.S. Bybee, who crafted the memo arguing torture wasn't torture unless it caused physical injury equivalent to organ failure, was recently promoted to the Ninth Federal Circuit. Are you noticing something odd here? The credibility gap. The White House press secretary denounced the Newsweek article for causing damage to the image of the United States abroad. Unfortunately, previous abuses committed at places like Abu Ghraib, notes the Center for American Progress, made Newsweek's claims not inconceivable. The bottom line here is that what Newsweek was reporting was not first reported by Newsweek. It's been reported for some time by a bunch of other sources. And, there's a fair amount of evidence that it might have happened. What I would like to see, instead of Newsweek coming out and saying, gee, we're sorry we reported this, I would like to see the United States government come out and say, either A, no, this never happened and it never would, or B, yes, we did this and we're terribly sorry. Because if we don't come clean on this, I mean, this you got to keep in mind, the abuse of the Quran, trashing the Quran, in Muslim countries is a more heinous crime than killing, particularly women or slaves, than killing other people in many cases. I mean, they were not up in arms about people being tortured, electrodes and all like that. Hey, that's just, you know, that happens in Jordan, that happens in Syria. That's life. But desecrate the Quran? Oh boy, you got a problem. Now, I'm not saying I agree with that, but I'm saying we should be understanding how this kind of stuff is going to play in these countries before we go trying this stuff out as torture techniques. And why are we building concentration camps to begin with? We're building the sixth one down in Guantanamo Bay. Six concentration camps. And now as the word is leaking out, the world is starting to react with horror. Or at least the Muslim world in particular. I'd say the rest of the civilized world. Why are you holding people in concentration camps who have never seen a judge, who have never been before a jury, who have never been charged specifically with a crime? Why hold them in a concentration camp? And why does the U.S. media continue to call them detention camps when they're concentration camps? 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Sean in Indianapolis on the line. Hey, Sean.
Hey, two things. I was wondering, you know, what's keeping the Muslims, the American Muslims, from really just going nuts and protesting all of this, you know, plain flat out disrespectfulness for their beliefs and their culture. You know, what keeps them from really being loud and heard from in the United States?
I'm sorry, run that by me again, Sean.
The American Muslim community.
Right.
Are they just really intimidated because if any of them, that's what it is?
Yes. Yes,
because
absolutely.
Really, I think that's what needs to happen.
I'll tell you, having the power of police institutions come down on you is one very scary thing.
Yeah, it's
is one very scary
don't
thing.
Want to protest, and the Muslims probably don't want to protest either.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
I said that the American people are too afraid to protest, then the Muslim Americans, especially after 9/11. Are probably very afraid to protest also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember in the 60s and the late 60s and the early 70s being part of the anti-Vietnam War movement and participating in the civil rights movement, although most of my activity was in the anti-Vietnam War stuff. And there was a certain amount of hubris. There's a certain amount of hubris that goes with being, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, and you think that you're indestructible and immortal. And you can take on the power of government. But when they kill those kids in Kent State, what was it, in 71, as I recall? Anyway, when they kill those kids in Kent State, it really sobered up a lot of people. And you see people getting arrested. You see groups being infiltrated. And suddenly you sit down and say, hey, wait a minute, this is serious. These people intend to harm us. And then you have your own government killing your friends. I mean, several of my friends went off to Vietnam and died. And so, you know, you have your government causing the deaths of people, you know, and it's a very sobering experience. And I have a feeling that a lot of the people in the American Muslim community are looking around going, American citizens are nonetheless are looking around going, now we understand how the Jews felt in the early days of Germany, you know, in the late 20s, early 30s in Germany. And, you know, could this go in that direction? Well, hopefully not in the United States. But here we are. We have concentration camp down in Cuba with 500-600 Muslims in it, and none of them have been charged with a crime. That's against the law. It's against federal law. It's against international law. And yet George W. Bush Jr. continues to say that he can do that. And you know, it's just wrong.
Something tells me that there's a lot of Kent State white killings going on, but it's not doing it in front of video cameras and everything now. I think that there's a lot of this going on, but we're not hearing about it. It's really, really, really scary when Newsweek takes the fall for an administration, a political fall.
I agree.
People do not realize how terrifying Newsweek taking the fall for this. Remember, just like in the 90s, remember when it came out in the San Jose Mercury that the CIA introduced crack cocaine into the neighborhoods?
Yeah. Yeah, and that story lasted. That story lasted about a week.
Yeah, and they were told to retract that too.
Yeah, yeah.
And one thing I gotta say for John Deutsch, he went to the community. I still have this videotape on C-SPAN. He went to the community to talk to them about that, and I thought that was just. I mean, I'm not, you know.
He wasn't making a confession, though. He was just saying, let's try and clean this up.
Well, and I mean, he at least went there and tried to address it, you know. But it would be really nice if something like that happened now.
Yeah. Well, dream on, Sean, because George Bush Jr. has never in his life taken responsibility for anything, and he's not about to begin, I guarantee you.
Well, it's not just him; it's the whole administration.
Oh, I know, the old saying, "A fish rots from the head down."
Yeah.
Yeah, it's playing out right in front of our eyes. Sean, got to move along. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Roy, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Tom. I don't know. I have been emotionally on a big roller coaster the last day or so. The thing that really got me started was when Rice was over in Baghdad lying, and it was picked up and nobody called her on the lie.
Which one of her lies are you referring to?
They brought the war to us.
Oh, yes.
And that was...
Yes, Saddam Hussein attacked us on 9/11. Saddam Hussein was flying those airplanes. Those were all Iraqis. Forget about the fact that they were Saudis.
On the CNN transcript at 11 o'clock that morning, or the first day that I looked at it, at 11 o'clock that morning, that quote was the second sentence of the CNN transcript.
Yeah.
11 hours later, it was at paragraph 37.
Right.
And it just, and nobody commented on it. And it's just part of that drumbeat of tying the two together.
Yeah, conflating 9/11 and Iraq when there's...
What actually even made it a lot of my emotional turmoil. We just had a young man from up at Pewaukee, if you're familiar with where that is, up just north of Santa Fe.
Yeah.
That was killed in the... swing in the assault on the Syrian border.
Uh-huh.
And the platoon of Marines that he was in, his squad took 100% casualties. There was four dead, and the rest of the platoon was wounded.
Wow.
And 100% of the squad was casualties. Four dead, the rest wounded. In the platoon, which is three squads, they suffered 60% casualties. We had a young man out here that was working for America Coming Together last fall, and in the get out the vote stuff.
Right.
Hope I keep this together. We don't know what's going on with him.
He's in Iraq now.
He is in that platoon.
Yeah.
He's in that platoon.
Oh my.
And by going up on the website, I was able to find three. There was been actually seven fatalities in that platoon, in that offensive. And yet you can only find, I spent 45 minutes and was only able to find three names.
Yeah.
They're hiding it. They're hiding it.
Well, it may take them a few days to pull that information together.
Well, this has been a week. This has been a week.
Yeah, okay. I mean, bigger issue here is that they're hiding right out in plain sight. They're hiding the truth of the fact that they lied us into this war unnecessarily just to enhance the prospects of Republicans getting elected in 2002 and 2004. That's what, in my opinion, this war was all about.
And that is the most disgusting thing about it.
Yeah, people think
Except,
this is a war
no,
for oil,
that,
and I don't think so.
That's not the most disgusting thing about it, Tom. The most disgusting thing is that our media did such a lousy job that 70% of the people that listen to Fox News and the rest of these cable people, media outlets, believed them.
Well,
that's
and it gets even worse.
Part.
It's and you've got Condi Rice saying about Iraq... They brought the war to us, and CNN, ABC, and CBS, and NBC, and all the major, you know, mainstream media reporting it as if it's just another statement. It's
just
like what happened to the days when reporters would say, "Well, you know, so and so said," but there's this.
Yeah, and it is just, I don't know. I had to blow off steam, but it just frustrates me so badly. And then Then I get mad, so I'm going to go down and I'm going to raise hell at the Minichi's office this afternoon.
Good.
And
yeah.
I got the 1-877-SOB-USOB, because I got three form letters from Domenici yesterday, full of spin and crap about the filibuster.
Yeah. Well, time to take him to task.
Talking point.
Time to take him to task.
We'll just raise some hell and just keep on keeping on doing the best we can.
That's what democracy's all about.
I'm not going to lay down and let them do it to me.
Well said, Roy. Well
That's
said,
fine.
Roy. Thank you. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. And that is what democracy is all about, is the adversarial nature of democracy is the key to the success of democracy. You can't have a democracy and have single-party rule, Republicans. You can't. It doesn't work. You have to have debate and discussion. You have to have a free and independent press. And in my opinion, free and independent of profit motive as well. You have to have a press that is committed to the public service if you're going to have democracy in the United States.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
State of Independence. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you would like to be on the program, Alan in Tennessee on the line. Hey, Alan.
Yes, isn't it one of the complaints in the Declaration of Independence that Great Britain was taking our citizens across the ocean for trial?
Yes.
Similar to what's going on now.
You know, that's interesting that you mentioned that. In fact, I've got the Declaration of Independence right here in front of me. For transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses. Yes. For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury. For abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, thereby establishing an arbitrary government and enlarging its boundaries. For taking away our charters about, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Good one, Alan. Wow.
Yeah, it seems like history's repeating itself.
Yeah, and guess what? It's the third George to be president of the United States. We had George Washington, George Bush Sr., George Bush Jr. This is the George the Third, and we fought a revolution against King George the Third. You want a little, I don't have my Twilight Zone music handy, but I would play it if I did. Alan, thanks for calling and sharing that with us. I do appreciate it. Let's see, Helen in Huntington on the line. Hey, Helen.
Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Can you hear me?
I can, just very fine.
All right. I just heard you talking about the concentration camps in Guantanamo.
Yes.
And I know that a month or so ago they brought up the president wanted $31 million to build a prison over there.
Yes.
One of our senators stood up and said, "We don't need that because we have all these camps over there, and they've lowered the amount of the people that they have over there." So it went through. What I'm trying to say is the $31 million, they sneaked that through the supplemental bill.
Oh, sure. We are.
And that was because of the armor that they wanted to vote for.
That's right.
For the boys.
We may have 45 million uninsured in this country. We may have half our population who goes bankrupt, going bankrupt because they're wiped out by medical expenses. We may have one of the largest percentages of our working class be the working poor and in poverty in the world. But we also have the most people in prison of any nation in the world. And the Bush administration is going to see to it that it stays that way. Helen, thanks for the call and thanks for the comment. And not just our citizens in prison, other citizens in prison as well, and without the rights of trial by jury, and without the right to see a lawyer, and without the right to face their accuser. This is, as Alan pointed out so correctly, this is what we fought a revolution to overthrow. And now it has seized our government again. Aristocracy, plutocracy, oligarchy. Anti-democratic forces. Now, obviously, the way to defeat it this time is not going to be by armed revolution. It's going to be in the ballot box. But first, we have to clean up the ballot boxes, number one. Number two, we got to get involved, you and me, right now.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.